And now it's time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use. Uncle Dennis here at Free Radio Santa Cruz on Thursday, April 21st. I'd like to ask you to have a pencil and paper handy so you can write down names, addresses, telephone numbers, web pages, all that information you'll need to take action. Let's start off with announcements. The spring issue of the Earth First Journal is out, and you can order EOSTAR 2016 today. And I got this message from the Earth First Newswire. Yep, it's spring, and we're happy to announce the release of our spring issue, Earth First Journal Volume 36, Number 1, EOSTAR 2016. This magazine is 88 pages of news, updates, and analysis from the radical ecological resistance movement, along with political prisoner updates, our eco-action group directory, and news of direct actions around the world. EOSTAR 2016 includes articles on shutting down tar sands pipelines, attacking the railroad system, pushing fracking out of Denmark, the No New Animal Lab campaign, Hunt Sab stopping the Scottish seal slaughter, Western ranchers, the LA methane leak, the COP21 and the liberals who danced around it, and a lot more. Actually, order a copy today or contact us if you're interested in buying this issue in bulk. Do remember that the content deadline for the summer issue of the Earth First Journal is May 1st, so make sure you get us those articles, pictures, drawings, letters, and poems, and how-tos before then. For the wild, the Earth First Journal Collective, and we found this information at theearthfirstjournal.org/newswire. The California Native Plant Society, Santa Cruz County Chapter Habitat Restoration Team is having a restoration this Saturday, April 23rd, 2016, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. We will continue work on eradication of invasive non-native French broom within the habitats of Quail Hollow Ranch. Earth Day, celebrated this week, is a time to recognize the vital work of those who voluntarily step forward to serve the needs of our environment and the natural world. The passion exemplified by volunteers and mentors inspires and strengthens us. We offer grateful thanks to folks for their commitment and valuable service. Here's how to get to Quail Hollow. From Santa Cruz, go up Graham Hill Road. As you come down into Felton, take a right at the first light in town and go up East Zionti Road for about 2 miles. Turn left on Quail Hollow Road and a half a mile up on the right, you'll get to the park entrance. Meet the group at the gravel parking lot on the left side of the entrance road. The Habitat Restoration Team is an all-volunteer group working to restore native habitat in the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. Their program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Please wear comfortable layered clothing, bring something to drink, and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine. But if things get particularly unpleasant, they call it a day. It might be a little cloudy on Saturday. You might want that warm layer. Tools are provided. Bring gloves and water. For more information, contact the program leader, Linda. Her phone number, 831-462-4041. That's 831-462-4041. Or you could send email to redwoodrn, that's REDWDRN, at packbell.net. Or you could visit the webpage at www.cruzcnps.org. And Coastal Watershed Council is going to have their 17th annual Snapshot Day on May 7th from 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. Join the Coastal Watershed Council and the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary for the 17th annual Snapshot Day event on Saturday, May 7th, 2016. Do you care about your local stream? Do you care about the wealth of the and health of the ocean? If you answered yes to either of these questions, then we need you to help us collect valuable water quality data during this amazing event. Community-based Snapshot Day provides an annual snapshot view of the health of the rivers and streams that flow into the Monterey Bay. In partnership with the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary and hundreds of community volunteers, we systematically sample stream water throughout the central coast of California. Participants will be trained and set up into teams to record valuable water quality data such as temperature, dissolved oxygen, electrical conductivity, pH, and transparency. You also learn how to collect water samples for laboratory analysis of bacterial indicators such as E. coli and total coliform, and nutrients such as nitrate and orthophosphate. Trainings will be held prior to the event. However, the training dates are still not posted on the website, so I don't know what they are, but maybe you call 831-464-9200. That's 831-464-9200 to get involved and to embrace your inner scientist, or you can visit their website at www.coastal-watershed.org. That's coastal-watershed.org. And Wilderness Watch News, victory for the Owyhee Wildernesses in Idaho. Wilderness Watch, joined by Western Watersheds Project, has just won a significant victory for the six wildernesses in the Owyhee region of Idaho. The victory came in our settlement of an appeal of the Bureau of Land Management's Owyhee Canyonlands Wilderness and Wild and Scenic Rivers Management Plan. Our appeal challenged decisions approving commercial trapping, unattended hunting blinds, and virtually unlimited motor vehicle use by ranchers. The six separate wildernesses are the Owyhee River Wilderness, North Fork Owyhee Wilderness, Pole Creek Wilderness, Big Jack's Creek Wilderness, Little Jack's Creek Wilderness, and the Bruno Jarbridge Rivers Wilderness. Congress designated these six wildernesses in 2009 as part of the Omnibus Public Lands Management Act. Altogether, they total over 516,000 acres of wilderness. The Bureau of Land manages all six areas together under a new wilderness management plan. But several aspects of the wilderness management plan violated the 1964 Wilderness Act and the National Environmental Policy Act. Wilderness Watch challenged these violations with the Interior Board of Land Appeals, and BLM decided to reach a settlement with us. The settlement, approved by the Interior Board of Land Appeals, contains the following victories for these wildernesses. Commercial trapping is banned. BLM wanted to allow commercial trapping in these wildernesses. Nearly all trapping is commercial, of course, and commercial activities like these are prohibited in the Wilderness Act. In the draft wilderness management plan, BLM had it right, and the draft plan prohibited commercial trapping. But the Idaho Department of Fish and Game pressured the BLM to reverse this position in the final plan, but it's gone now. Motor vehicles for ranchers curtailed. The BLM had attempted to use an unprecedented and unlawfully loose approval process in the wilderness management plan to allow ranchers to use ATVs and other motor vehicles for routine ranching activities like herding or rounding up cows in the wildernesses. This motor vehicle use violated the prohibitions in the Wilderness Act. Here again, the draft wilderness management plan had this provision right and prohibited motor vehicles for these activities. But the BLM caved in to pressure and changed it in the final plan. And hunting blinds are outlawed. The Bureau of Land Management wanted to allow unattended hunting blinds in the wildernesses, which would violate the Wilderness Act's prohibition on structures and installations. In addition, the purpose of unattended blinds would have been to acclimate wildlife to the presence of these structures over time so that hunters could more easily shoot from them. As with both provisions above, the BLM caved into political pressure and changed the provisions from the draft to the final wilderness plan with no explanation or analysis. Thanks to this victory, these six Owyhee Canyonlands wildernesses and their wild critters will be better protected for current and future generations. Take action. Join with us to protect wilderness and all of its unique values with a donation to support this important work. Go to www.wildernesswatch.org. That's www.wildernesswatch.org. And the Oregon cormorant slaughter has been stopped for 2 days in a row in this story from LCA, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Last Chance for Animals and showing animals respect and kindness have stopped the cormorant slaughter in northern Oregon for the second day in a row. There were high-speed chases and aversion tactics by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services. Our presence is keeping them from coming out and killing these birds. LCA and Shark have been on a boat in the Columbia River following Wildlife Services agents as they attempted to stalk and gun down double-crested cormorants of East Sand Island. The killers do not want the public to see the bloodshed, so they tried and run and hide from us, but eventually gave up and left. The government defends the sickening cormorant cull with the flimsy excuse of protecting wild salmon, which the birds eat. But the truth is that human development, not cormorants, are to blame for the dwindling salmon population. Dams, hatcheries, and other man-made constructions at the Columbia River Basin are the true threats, and the innocent birds should be left alone. Studies on East Sand Island have shown that the cormorants and other birds are eating up to 94% of the steelhead and salmon spolts that try to get down the Columbia River on their way to the sea. Scientists have found piles of pit tags, small tracking devices placed in the fish on East Sand Island among cormorant nests. Apparently, the birds are eating the fish and pooping out the pit tags. This story was found at theearthfirstjournal.org/newswire. And in news from Argentina, animals have been liberated and a testing center was torched in this story from Argentina Indie Media, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Just a note, this action took place in January of 2016, but the communique was not released until now. The animals used for the past 300 years in research institutions are usually healthy animals coming from vivariums, which are places inside the research center that raise the animals. In some cases, the animals come from zoos, a vivarium, a physical place where animals are raised, kept, and used. The National University of La Plata in Argentina deals with hundreds of animals each day for educational and investigative means. These animals are turned into objects for human use, denied freedom, tortured, and murdered. Recently, we decided to stop this unjust situation and liberate some oppressed beings, the animal liberation from the UNLP vivarium. Released were 26 cats, 10 guinea pigs, 5 rats, and all regained their freedom, and the 2 vivariums were left demolished by fire. This is not an isolated act. We will continue until they realize that every action has a consequence. We will not stop until the exploitation stops. Fighting for freedom is everyone's responsibility. Progress and science have declared themselves as enemy to nature and freedom, managed by those who have power and wish to keep it no matter what. The fundamental part of its development is the separation of humans from the rest of nature, and one of the ways they develop this is through jailing and using animals. We have decided to start a ferocious campaign against animal experimentation, particularly that of the University of La Plata, where they test on cats, guinea pigs, and other animals. For that, we find fire and violence to be necessary tactics, which are nothing compared to what they employ against non-human animals, who they abduct and experiment on. We're not going to stop until the fire, intimidation, and whatever means necessary will make it clear that it is not safe nor viable to test on animals. To prove this point, we take credit for the total liberation of cats, guinea pigs, and mice from one of the University of La Plata's vivariums, as well as the subsequent arson. This is not an isolated act. We will continue until they realize that every act has a consequence. We will not stop until the exploitation stops. We encourage stalking, intimidating, and destroying these and every exploiter of animals. Happy New Year's, exploiters! This communique was found in the earthfirstjournal.org/newswire. And Towaba poachers have been caught on camera in this story from the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. From San Felipe, Baja California, Mexico, on April 15, 2016, at 0053 hours, Sea Shepherd Conservation Society captured never-before-seen footage of Totowaba poachers caught in the act of pulling in their gill nets. That night, the motor yacht Farley Mowat hid in the darkness looking for illegal activity. After identifying a panga on radar, Sea Shepherd used Predator, a quadricopter drone equipped with a long-range thermal night vision camera. Within minutes, Predator was above the poachers, documenting their illegal activities. The poachers quickly began to flee, pushing the illegal gill net back into the water and speeding away from the scene of the crime. The MY Marley Fowat continued to track the poachers via the drone while relaying the coordinates and headings to the Mexican Navy. With the chase handed over to the Mexican Navy, the Sea Shepherd crew commenced its search for the illegal gillnet. A custom-designed net-snagging device was deployed off the stern, and the small boat was launched. The net was located a couple of hours later, and the crew began removing it from the water, freeing four live cow-nosed rays. Sadly, the net had already claimed the lives of two juvenile hammerhead sharks and a couple of corvina fish. Using our night vision drone, Sea Shepherd was able to capture never-before-seen footage of Totoaba poachers operating under the cover of darkness, stated Roy Sassano, executive director and drone pilot from Canada. Now the poachers know they cannot act with impunity. In January of 2016, Sea Shepherd Conservation Society was granted the authority by the Mexican government to remove illegal gillnets in the Gulf of California. Since then, Sea Shepherd has removed 40 gillnets, saving untold numbers of vaquita, totoaba, whales, sharks, dolphins, and other marine wildlife. Sea Shepherd Conservation Society launched Operation Milagro II in November of 2015 with the objective of stopping the extinction of the endangered vaquita porpoise. The vaquita are the smallest cetaceans and only inhabit the northernmost part of the Gulf of California. They're the most endangered marine mammal in the world, with the population suspected to be only a few dozen individuals. Although all gillnets are dangerous for vaquita, the greatest threat is posed by the gillnets used to catch the totoaba fish due to the size of the mesh. As a similar-sized animal, vaquita who swim under these gillnets become entangled and drown. Both the totoaba and the vaquita are listed as critically endangered and are protected in Mexico. However, the black market trade in totoaba swim bladders drives the poaching of the fish and is driving the extinction of the vaquita porpoise. In an effort to save the vaquita in April 2015, the Mexican Navy enacted a 2-year ban on the use of gillnets in a 13,000 square kilometer area covering a large portion of the northern Gulf of California. You can read more about this story at www.seashepherd.org. And let's turn to biological diversity news from the Center for Biological Diversity. The New York Times, in an op-ed, has stated that Yellowstone grizzlies are in danger. An op-ed in the New York Times by Center staffer Lydia Millett called national attention to the Fish and Wildlife's pending proposal to strip Endangered Species Act protection from grizzlies in the greater Yellowstone ecosystem. The bear's numbers dropped dramatically last year with a net loss of about 40 individuals, yet the feds, under pressure from surrounding states to allow wandering grizzlies to be hunted, will release a proposed rule to declare the animals recovered. This is bad news for grizzlies already under stress because of a decline of key food sources such as whitebark pine and cutthroat trout, and because of genetic isolation from other grizzly population. The Center for Biological Diversity and their allies have been advocating for years to retain crucial protection for the bears and to expand grizzly recovery areas into more of the animal's historic habitat, including California. Grizzlies in the lower 48 currently live in only 2-4% of their ancient range. And a court has returned polar bear protections across 120 million acres. It's a huge win for polar bears. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals upheld the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's 2010 decision to protect more than 120 million acres as critical habitat for bears. In its ruling, the court reversed a 2013 lower court decision that shot down that designation after it was challenged by the state of Alaska and the oil and gas industry. These habitat protections are vital as polar bears struggle against the climate crisis and melting sea ice. Without help, scientists predict more than two-thirds of the world's polar bears, including all of those in Alaska, will be gone by the year 2050. Arctic sea ice, which polar bears depend on for hunting and raising their cubs, had hit record lows this winter. This decision gives polar bears some breathing room, but President Obama and other leaders still have to move fast to leave dirty fossil fuels in the ground to give this species and so many others a true shot at survival, said Cassie Siegel, a Center for Biological Diversity attorney who filed the original legal petition that gained Endangered Species Act protection for polar bears. And a lawsuit is fighting to protect sage-grouse on public land across 10 states. The center and allies went to court over more than a dozen plans produced by federal agencies that fail to protect greater sage grouse from a series of threats, including fossil fuel development, grazing, and mining. The plans cover about 70 million acres of public lands on 10 states, administered by the Bureau of Land Management and the U.S. Forest Service. Too many of the plans include giveaways to industries and other special interests that will ultimately hurt these iconic strutting western birds and the landscapes where they live. We're not trying to eliminate the plans, but to strengthen them with science-based protections recommended by the government's own scientists. This issue is about far more than the sage-grouse, said the Center for Biological Diversity's Randy Spivak. It's about the iconic sagebrush sea, hundreds of other species, and recreation opportunities for this and future generations. And favorable weather has boosted monarch populations. The annual overwintering count of monarch butterflies shows the population at 150 million, which is wonderful news considering last year's truly alarming count of only 42 million, the second lowest since surveys began in 1993. But consider also, butterfly experts expected monarch numbers to rise due to favorable summer conditions in the species' U.S. breeding areas, since butterflies' populations fluctuate widely with changing weather. And the latest population count is still only 68% of its 22-year average. Monarchs need a very large population size in order to be resilient to threats from severe weather events, pesticides, and climate change. To put things in perspective, a single storm in 2002 killed an estimated 500 million monarch butterflies. The Center for Biological Diversity and allies have a pending petition to protect monarchs under the Endangered Species Act. The increase in monarch numbers is great news for sure, said the center's Tiara Curry, but the bottom line is that this much-beloved butterfly still needs Endangered Species Act protection to make sure its amazing migration will endure for generations to come. And in a win, the Forest Service has rejected sprawl that threatened the Grand Canyon. It's a big victory for a very big natural wonder. The U.S. Forest Service has rejected a proposal to widen roads and build infrastructure through Arizona's Kaibab National Forest, which would have paved the way literally for a sprawling urban development near the southern entrance of Grand Canyon National Park. An Italian corporation called Stylo Development Corp. sought to construct more than 2,100 housing units and 3 million square feet of commercial space, including hotels, a spa, and a conference center, in the tiny town of Tassayan. Not only would all this development spell disaster for local wildlife and wildlands, it would also threaten local water sources. The superintendent of Grand Canyon National Park called the proposal one of the greatest threats to the national park in its nearly 100-year history, a sentiment echoed by American Indian tribes, local residents, city leaders, and environmental groups, including the Center for Biological Diversity. Americans demand protection of the Grand Canyon, and we thank the Forest Service for listening, said the center's Katie Davis. We hope more positive decisions are made to protect the water and wildlife of this iconic region. And a fight was launched to continue wolf monitoring in Montana and Idaho. In May, the Fish and Wildlife Service is planning to discontinue its monitoring of wolves in Montana and Idaho. But there's a problem. Researchers now say aggressive, state-sanctioned hunting and trapping are putting Northern Rockies wolf populations at renewed risk. That's why the center and their allies filed a notice of intent to sue the service to extend federal monitoring. Ongoing monitoring is crucial to understanding how these wolves are faring in the face of new threats, including aerial gunning in remote areas, the hiring of professional shooters in federal the designated wilderness, and legislation in Idaho requiring use of significant amounts of state funding to kill wolves. Wolves in these states need monitoring now more than ever. And a challenge has launched over plans to relocate 1,100 desert tortoises. The Center for Biological Diversity has announced plans to challenge a proposal to relocate more than 1,100 protected desert tortoises in Southern California, the largest such project ever attempted. What's the problem? federal agencies have failed to fully examine how the relocations, meant to accommodate expansion of the Marine Corps base at 29 Palms, might harm the population of tortoises in the Mojave Desert. Having survived tens of thousands of years in California's arid lands, desert tortoises have declined precipitously in recent years, particularly in the West Mojave. Desert tortoise translocation has never been attempted on such a large scale. In 2009, the U.S. Army stopped a large translocation of desert tortoises from their Fort Irwin expansion area due to massive tortoise deaths. Although these translocations are implemented to save tortoises, they often end up hurting or killing them. This population has declined by 50% in the past 10 years, said the center's Eileen Anderson. If the past is any guide, up to half the tortoises won't survive this relocation, pushing these tortoises in the West Desert of Mojave closer to extinction. And a court has overturned a government refusal to protect wolverines. A crucial win for one of the West's rarest predators threatened by climate crisis, a federal judge responding to a lawsuit filed by the Center for Biological Diversity and their allies overturned a 2014 decision by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that denied Endangered Species Act protection for wolverines. The decision means the agency now has to re-examine whether these protections will be provided. It's clear wolverines need help. There are only about 300 left in the Northern Rockies and Cascades. As a judge pointed out, wolverines are a snow-dependent species standing squarely in the path of global climate change. The decision to deny protections was an 11th-hour bow to political pressure that ignored the agency's own scientists, so we're glad to see these fierce predators have been given another shot at survival. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, www.freakradio.org and 101.3 FM. You can hear a rebroadcast tomorrow afternoon, Friday at 3 p.m. You can also listen to the Earth First Update on KRFP Radio Free Moscow in Moscow, Idaho, 90.3 FM, where the broadcast is at 3 p.m. on Wednesdays. You can also listen to the Earth First Update on Truth and Justice Radio, WZBC, in Boston, Massachusetts, also on 90.3 FM, sometime between 6 and 10 a.m. on Sundays. You can also tune in to the Grateful Dread Public Radio and Internet Radio Station, Sundays at 2 a.m. for the Earth First Update. Go to gdprnashville.org. That's gdprnashville.org, and you can also find them on tunein.com and Spotify. And you can go to radioforall.net, that's radio the number 4all.net, where you can listen online or download a podcast of this or previous versions of the Earth First Update. Please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download and broadcast. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced at Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening, and please tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.